Today's daf in Masechet Shabbat, brought to you from Yerushalayim Ir HaKodesh, is daf Memhei, and we have a lot of very exciting issues that we need to go into today. And remember what we've been discussing up until now. We've been in the middle of a sugya that is quite complex. The machlokas so far, the machlokas between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon, as to the concept of mukta. And the last thing that we learned yesterday was that we had what appeared to be a contradiction that we needed to resolve. And that contradiction came from the following. We finally came to understand that according to Rabbi Shimon, there is no concept of mukt, meaning ein lo mukt. He doesn't hold of a thing called mukt. He does hold of a thing called muhan. And muhan, as we've seen, is fundamental to all of Dinei Shabbos. And something has to be usable for Shabbos on some level in order for it to be used on Shabbos. And therefore, it's a given that according to Rabbi Shimon, something like a rock or cash that has absolutely no presence within a Shabbos milieu for usability whatsoever, that is, we call that mukta. It's a little bit misleading that we call it mukta, because that is not really mukta, according to Rabbi Shimon, because Rabbi Shimon doesn't believe in mukta. And that is meant to be taken seriously, less lay mukta. But it is eina min hamukhan. It's a given that it's not min hamukhan, and that, of course, Rabbi Shimon holds up. There's no question of that. We also discovered yesterday that Rabbi Shimon agrees that there's a concept of itkatsoi midaita. Now, that was the case that we had when a guy fills up an entire bowl of oil. He puts a wick into it, and he lights it before Shabbos, and the thing is going to be burning more than 24 hours. So in that case, we said that even though the flame went out, and even though normally Rabbi Shimon holds the fact that there was a flame in something, Bein HaShmoshes, does not aser it, b'kol hayom kulo, why should it? The only reason it would is because of the extension of the concept of muhan that we call mukta. In this case, when somebody is mikatseya something from his mind and sets it aside, that is the equivalent of eno min hamukhan. But to say that something should become automatically off limits because of the fact that it isn't 100% usable at a particular time during Shabbos, where would we get that from? That is a complete extension of the idea of Eino Min HaMuchan. It may not be Muchan at this moment, but it was Muchan before Shabbos to be used on Shabbos when the fire would go out or whatever. So why would it have to be Muchan the entire time? I don't understand what any of that means. All of that is extensions of the idea of Muchan, which only Rabbi Yehuda holds, not Rabbi Shimon. So what we've discovered so far is that Rabbi Shimon agrees that in a case where something is currently actually unavailable on Shabbos, the current situation will be a iser that is equivalent to mukta. But let's examine what that is. If it's disgusting, disgusting is not automatically mukta. So I don't hold a mukta machmas mius. But how about if it's usser? If I cannot move it, that is therefore ipso facto currently not muhan. So when we say that Rabbi Shimon agrees to muktzu b'machas iser, it isn't quite true. He doesn't see muktzu b'machas iser the same way that Rabbi Yehuda sees muktzu b'machas iser. He sees muktzu b'machas iser as unusable because of the fact that it is, by definition, not muchan l'Shabbos. Something usher on Shabbos can't be muchan l'Shabbos. It's as simple as that. Fine. According to Rabbi Yehuda, something that is not defined as usable is considered to be out of sight, out of mind, and therefore, if it's something, I didn't even think about it, but you know what? It's disgusting. All right, if it's disgusting, you can't use it. Something is only going to be used for purposes of doing iser. I mean, okay. I mean, I want to use it for something else. That's not considered to be, according to Rabbi Shimon, at all muktzah. The concept of a kli shemalachto li iser is a meaningful concept according to Rabbi Shimon. And we will see that there are many others. One of the issues that we discussed was the question of basis. And that ran us into problems yesterday. Because we found that in the case that we had of the luggage with the clip-on wheelie, that the question of whether the wheelie is considered to be attached to the luggage or not also was reflected in the issue of whether if you had put your wallet or money into a pocket on the wheelie part, whether it would be considered to usher the entire thing in moving it. But meanwhile, what it did say over there is that in that case, as long as there's money in it, you would not be allowed to move it. Mashma, that if there was money in it, you would be allowed to move it. But even if the money was there the entire Ben Hashmashas, you would be allowed to move it if it wasn't currently there. And our problem began with the fact that Rav Paskins, that if you put money on a bed and you put the money on it before Shabbos, so then you're not allowed to be metaltal at all because it's a basis ledover usser. And if the money was on it, the entire Ben Hashmashas, even if there's no money on it now, it would still be a basis ledover usser. Now, this didn't make sense in terms of the Mishnah that we had in Kalim that said only while there's money in the pocket. So how do we explain that? So yesterday we explained it, that there's a difference between the two cases simply in who holds of them. The first case where Rav was coming along and saying that if the money was on the bed during the entire Ben Hashmashas, it becomes a basis ledover ha'asur, that is going aliba to Rabbi Yehuda. Because remember that Rabbi Yehuda extends the concept of eino min hamuchan into this idea of something that was muktzeh, and that it wasn't specifically Mukhan for Shabbos. And therefore, the fact that, well, I mean, before Shabbos, I knew that if a kid came along and took the money off of the bed, I would still be able to sit on the bed, right? Wrong. Why? Because it wasn't something that had been set aside to use for Shabbos. And since there was something that was done to it that made it without the specific intent to use it for Shabbos, eino min hamuchan, that's the extension, aliba de Rabbi Yehuda, of this new concept of muktzeh, which is Rabbi Shimon says, I don't understand. Before Shabbos, did you know that if a kid would have come and take off the money, that it was perfectly usable on Shabbos? So why would it be also the entire Shabbos? I don't get it. You don't have to say, get up there and say, I intend to use this bed during Shabbos if a kid comes along at the, whatever. Why would it automatically become muktzeh just because I didn't say that? That's the machlokas between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon. Yesterday, we ended up saying, yep, it actually makes sense that Rav would be paskening that even if the money wasn't on it, but it was on it, the entire Ben Hashmashas would still be usher, because that's consistent with Rav's psak about the difference of hanging your neirot, your lamp, on a tree for Shabbos, and hanging your lamp on a tree for Yontav. Because on Shabbos, we don't need to worry that you're going to go and retrieve the lamp from off of the tree and therefore be over on Mishtamish b'mechubar l'karka, which is a gzeira that you may end up being telesh, a branch. But why not? Because it's muktzeh. But wait a minute. According to Rabbi Shimon, it's not muktzeh. You're right. Therefore, he must hold like Rabbi Yehuda. So this is Rav's consistent approach. He holds like Rabbi Yehuda. That's the last thing that we learned yesterday, and we got up to like one-fifth of the way down, which is v'haboimine de Rav. Okay, so let's start with that. So the last thing we said was Rav holds like Rabbi Yehuda, and the Gemara says, but that doesn't seem to be true. Because Lamaisa, they asked Rav a Shaila, and Shaila was Lamaisa. Remember that they had these chavre, that were the it was about chlokas we had earlier between Rashi and Tosfos, about Bichiyosi, Chabari, Tebovel, you know, whether it was the Persians or it was an Ummah that had invaded the Persians. But in any event, they were Zoroastrians. They were very machbit on the use of fire, except for their religious holiday where they worshiped the fire and so on. And so if you lit Hanukkah during Christmas time, they would come along and they would really get you into big trouble with fines, beat you up, whatever. But it wasn't dangerous in terms of life-threatening, but it was a very, very difficult kind of situation. Nobody wanted to risk putting their menorah out there for these guys to come along and bust up your head. So they asked him, Rav, would it be mutter on Shabbos Chanukah to take down the Chanukah if you heard that these guys are in town? And Omar, yes, you could. So apparently, what do you mean? Yes, you could. That's only true according to Rabbi Shimon. Okay, I mean, come on. It was an emergency. I mean, it's a shat satrak. They were asking about a time. I mean, it doesn't have to be sakonis the fascist to be mater muktza, does it? So it was a time where things were tough. And shat satrak is different. And of course, that is the reason, because Rav Kahana and Rav Ashi were there and they heard his psak and they said, what? Is that the halacha? You're allowed to move a Hanukkah menorah on Shabbos? How are you allowed to do that according to Rabbi Yehuda? And he said, well, listen, you don't think Rabbi Shimon is good enough to be Samech on B'Shas Satchak? Okay, so you see that what Rav was saying is that B'Shas Satchak, he would go like Rabbi Shimon, but his consistent psak was indeed Aliba to Rabbi Yehuda. So that's fine. Now, what we are about to embark on is a most marvelous journey of discovery of the depths of Rabbi Shimon's Shita. And as usual, Reish Lakish has got a prod right at the beginning to force us to recognize what Rabbi Shimon is really saying. So as I mentioned earlier, what we said according to Rabbi Shimon was that in a case where you clearly set something aside, and you had no intent of using it, that is obviously eno min hamuchan, because you did something that set it aside. So where do we have that? Well, we had the case of the ka'ara that you filled up with shemen. You lit it before Shabbos. It was big enough to burn the whole Shabbos. Over there, strangely enough, already Rabbi Shimon seems to sound like Rabbi Yehuda, that once it was burning from before, it's also the entire Shabbos. The mechanism of that iser, however, is entirely different. The mechanism is because he was actively mikatsea midato, and that makes it the equivalent of a rock that's just lying there. It's not something that's in the Shabbos milieu, according to Rabbi Shimon. Now, the question is that Reish Lakish here wants to examine further, is that you'll note that these cases of Rabbi Shimon, where we found that he was maskim, that there's this idea of eno min hamuchan, was limited so far to something which is not an item at all that enters into a world of Shabbos, like a rock or money. That we understand is eno min hamuchan. At what point does your determination that you wish it to be set aside, at what point is that eno min hamuchan? Because remember, we made a mistake yesterday and we thought that if you set something aside just by saying, that was the case of the money on the bed. And we thought that if you just say, I want to use this bed for money, then it doesn't matter whether you put the money on it or you didn't put the money on it, that would be it katsoi, right? But we asked on that from the Mishnah, and we said that's crazy. Because if you even manufacture something which is meant to be used on Shabbos, and nonetheless it's completely mutter to use, even according to Rabbi Yehuda, because you can be metaltal and ner chadash. So how could you say that thinking about it is going to be more than actually making it for the specific purpose of not being able to use it on Shabbos? That's crazy. So we gave up on that. Okay. So then we said it's only when it's coupled to an actual act. So in the case where we're talking about money, you would have needed to put the money on the bed and not say, I want to use this bed for money on Shabbos, right? Okay, so now Reish Lakish is bothered by the implications of that. Because itkatsai midaite is effectively a internal consciousness and not an external act, right? You can say, okay, but I mean, he did fill up the entire bowl with oil and put in the wick into it. Yes, but is that enough? Suppose he never lit the wick. Would Rabbi Shimon say that if he never lit the wick, that it was also iskatsoi midaite? Now, that's not at all clear, is it? What I want to know, asks Reish Lakish to Rabbi Yochanan, what I want to know is something even more than that. How about a guy who has seeds? Okay, he's got wheat seeds. He puts them into the ground. Those seeds have not germinated yet before Shabbos. They're sitting there. And the guy's hungry. And he says, you know what? I can always buy more seeds after Shabbos, but right now I'd love a little bit of wheat to chew on. He's not going to be over on being ochre then, because they have not taken root yet even. You just put them in right before Shabbos. Is that the same as having the bowl of oil and filling it up with oil, but not actually lighting it? Because, I mean, it's still accessible. So over here, but you could say, but I don't understand. I mean, the guy put it into a matzv in which usually after about the time, he's not going to be able to use it on Shabbos. And he clearly was not intending to use it on Shabbos. Well, I don't know. What do you say? Asked Reish Lakish. It's a brilliant question. So therefore, if we're going to start probing into what Reb Shimon considers to be his katsoi midaite, we're going to have to face up to these kind of cases. And that's what we're going to do today. So asks Reb Reish Lakish to Reb Yochanan, what would be the din if a person goes ahead and he was zorea chitim bekarka, or he takes an egg and he puts this egg underneath a chicken so that it should be incubated over Shabbos, which means that he certainly has decided he is not going to be eating this egg. Oh, in the middle of Shabbos, he decides, why not? So is that considered to be muktza since he did an act that was itzkatsoi midaite? Or because that act does not actually make it inaccessible, remember, if he lit the fire in the bowl, it makes the oil inaccessible because of the isra of mechabe, right? Mashenken over here, just because he put the egg under the chicken doesn't mean it's inaccessible. He can go boo to the chicken, chicken jumps, egg is in his mouth. So what would be the din? Answered Reb Yochanan to him, let's just read that inside. Ma, what would be the din? Ki let leila Rabbi Shimon muktzeh lo dachi biyadayim. Where does Rabbi Shimon not hold of this concept that something would be usher because you pushed it out of mind? That's only if you didn't do an act of some kind. But if you did some kind of act, then that is considered to be muktzeh. Or does he not hold that just doing something is considered to be muktzeh at all? Omar Le said Rabbi Yochanan to him, let me explain to you, sir. Ein muktzeh l'Rabbi Shimon, ela shemen shebener b'sha'ashu dolek. The only muktzeh, according to Rabbi Shimon, is oil that's in the lamp at the time that it's lit. Now, this is very misleading because that really isn't true. And obviously, he is not referring to oil in the lamp, which is the direct source of fuel, because anyway, you wouldn't be able to use that shemen while it's lit, because you'd be over on kivoy. So I don't need a concept of muktzeh, according to Rabbi Shimon, to aser oil in a lamp. Therefore, what we're talking about over here has got to be oil that has fallen into the kli that you put tachas aner to catch the oil. We're over there. Obviously, there's no problem of kivoy. And yet, we saw that Rabbi Shimon said, as long as it's burning, you're not allowed to take that oil. Now, why would that be? Clearly, it's because it was itkatsoi, because you set it aside when you lit the fire. But over there, you have the additional questions that you must take into consideration, in which your das is not the determining factor all on its own. It's because with the das, you did an act that actually made it inaccessible. Why is it inaccessible in that case? For two reasons. It seems to be for two reasons. We're going to clarify this later. And that is, and the correct girsa at this point, I think, is like the Tosef Shishonim's girsa, that since this has been set aside for the purposes of a mitzvah, and something that is set aside for purposes of mitzvah, you are not allowed to just go ahead and use it for your own chol purposes. There's a concept of bizui mitzvah. Therefore, it's already considered to be set aside for that. Furthermore, you're not allowed to take it because of the question of iser. And therefore, put the two together with his act, then you've got a serious eino munamuchan, according to Rabbi Shimon. But just because the guy put the egg under the chicken or put the seed into the ground, he didn't make it inaccessible, not practically and not halachically. So all that essentially happened over here is that he was determined not to use it on Shabbos, and he did something that showed that determination. That's not enough. It's got to be something that actually makes it inaccessible. Uh-huh. But are you saying that if it wouldn't have been that we have both Huktzila Mitzvato and Huktzila Isuro, that there wouldn't be Usur according to Rabbi Shimon? I mean, surely Rabbi Shimon agrees that if something is set aside for a mitzvah, that it's unusable. Now, gentlemen, we are about to enter a new concept over here, because do not get confused with Huktzila Mitzvasei with the concept of Bizui Mitzvah qua Bizui Mitzvah. Remember that Huktzila Mitzvasei seems on the surface to have nothing to do with Shabbos. And in reality, it has nothing to do with Shabbos. Because Huktzila Mitzvasei is true all the time. For instance, this is the most common case of Huktzila Mitzvasei that all of you are aware of. And that is somebody builds a sukkah and he decorates the sukkah. And he puts up kramim, sadinim, mitzuyarim. He puts up all of these beautiful colors and embroidery, and he decorates it. He's ma'ater, and he's talabah, gozim, afarsakim, shkenim, rimonim, and he puts up these, like we do, you know, nuts, peaches, almonds, pomegranates, and he puts up grape clusters in it, and he makes these pretty wreaths out of different shibolim, out of different grains, or he fills up a bottle with wine, or with oil, or with beautiful flour, he hangs it up in a plastic bag. These are things that everybody does. You are not allowed to use those decorations until after the end of Shmini Atzeres, Ad Matzah Yom Tov Achron, unless you made a t'nai, and then the t'nai would be that you had to make a declaration that you are not going to be Beda from these things. In other words, you have a right to take these things, the entire Ben HaShemoshes, if you want to. Fine. So then they don't become Muksa, Ben HaShemoshes, for the entire holiday. But the idea that you set something aside for a mitzvah makes it inaccessible. Now, that would mean that, if this is true that it's Rabbi Shimon saying this, that would mean that Rabbi Shimon, in the case of the lit candle, is not the oil set aside for the Shabbos candle, is not lighting Shabbos candles a mitzvah. So why did you have to throw in, Rabbi Yochanan, that it's also Huktzila Mitzvasei, and it's also Huktzila Isurei, and therefore put those two things together with the fact that he went ahead and did it, he made it totally inaccessible. You didn't need to say that. You should have simply said, if it was Huktzila Mitzvasei, therefore it's considered to be Neinu Min HaMuchan. Wait a minute. That's all great, but what makes you think that this is going according to Rabbi Shimon, says the Gemara? Maybe this is only Rabbi Yehuda. You're jumping to conclusions. So mimai the Rabbi Shimon, because I can prove to you that Rabbi Shimon buys into this. Because Rabbi Chiya Bar Yosef said a braita in front of Rabbi Yochanan, and that is as follows. If you have a sukkah, now the sukkah that we're talking about now is not a sukkah on sukkahs. It's a sukkah on Pesach, or it's a sukkah on Shavuos. So if you have a sukkah on a yontiv other than sukkahs, so you're not allowed to take any wood from that sukkah on yontiv, but you can take things that were next to it, that are somukhla, things that are next to it. And those things are, obviously you can't break it down, because that would be an actual Isser on Yontif of Soyser, which you're not allowed to do. But what about if it collapses? Are you allowed to use the wood if it collapsed? So what we're saying is you can't use the wood if it collapsed. But if you had a stack of wood or other things that were up against it, and it's not actually part of the sukkah per se, and therefore there wouldn't have been an iser of actually taking it while it was up, so then they're also not muksa. So that you could use, but Rabbi Shimon is matir, if the sukkah collapses, Rabbi Shimon is matir, but he agrees, and this is the crucial point. Veshavin, Rabbi Shimon agrees to the Tanna Kamma, as Rabbi Yehuda, that if it's a sukkah on Yontiv of Sukkot, so Sukkot Hachag b'Chag, there for sure you can't use any of it, even a little bit of Rabbi Shimon. Why? Because it was Huktzila Mitzvasei, and imhitna le'a kol afitzno, as we said before in the previous limud. So you see from here that Rabbi Shimon is made it to Huktzila Mitzvasei. Why then does Rabbi Yochanan bring in a combination of Huktzila Mitzvasei and Huktzila Isuro, and only in that case No, he didn't mean that. He didn't mean that. What he was saying was that it has to be something that's in the same state as the shemen in the ner. In other words, the huktzah l'isuro defines the extent of the huktzah l'mitzvasai. And this is very important to recognize because it's the way that the Gemara is actually incorporating the din of the ka'ara and the kos, aliba, Rabbi Shimon, who is made that even if the fire went out, in that case it was hooked. Because what Rabbi Yochanan is trying to say is like this. It's true that when you're talking about huktzah l'mitzvasai on Sukkot, what defines the huktzah l'mitzvasai? The mitzvah of Sukkot. How long does that mitzvah go on for? The entire Yontif. Why does it say that it's also on Shmini Atzeres? That part is going according to Rabbi Yehuda, who holds that since it was Muktzah ben Hashmoshes, on Mitzoy Yontif, because it was still a suffix that it's Sukkot, so it remains also the entire next day. But Enoch Inami, according to Rabbi Shimon, the entire Yontif, you would not be able to take down the beautiful grapes that are hanging from the Sukkot to eat them. Okay, but that's because the entire Yontif is supposed to be a mitzvah. How about the Neiris of Shabbos? How long is something considered to be huktzah l'mitzvasai in the Neiris of Shabbos? Now that you didn't explain. It's not the whole Shabbos, is it? It comes along, Rabbi Yochanan, to say that since there is an Isser to put out the fire on Shabbos, because of that, obviously, the huktzah l'mitzvasai, in terms of when it was set aside, was as long as it's going to burn. That's all that he's saying. So Memela, so long as it's burning, it would be huktzah l'mitzvasai. That's all that I meant to say. So if it's like that case of the Shemen Shemener, the only difference is that if in my mind I wanted it to burn the entire Shabbos and I bedafka set it aside by putting it inside of a giant bowl that would allow it to burn the entire Shabbos, then the mitzvah is defined in terms of the complete huktzah midaite, and this is set aside for the mitzvah of burning for Shabbos, and it is no longer muchan for my use on Shabbos. And this incorporates Rabbi Shimon's both halachas, as long as it's burning, or as long as it was not put into a big bowl in order to remain burning. Okay. It's Marnami, and for sure that's what Rabbi Yochanan meant, even though it's a little bit of a kvetch. In other words, let's just get this straight. Originally, we thought we were talking about two separate timing. Hoel v'huktzah mitzvaso and huktzah isuro. Now we're saying, hoel v'huktzah mitzvaso kol zman isuroi. And as long as it's usher, that will define the time of the mitzvah. And Omer Pchia Barav Omer Rabbi Yochanan, there is no such thing as just something being muktzah unless it's the equivalent of ke'ein, it is similar in its own circumstances to shemen in a ner which is currently burning. For as long as it takes to finish burning it. Okay, so now it's clear to us that as long as a particular thing is a Shabbos type of item, meaning it's something that is useful on Shabbos, could be useful on Shabbos, then it's not going to be muktzah libet Rabbi Shimon. How about where we have something that is set aside, there's no iser and no huktzah l'mitzvaso, but there is another problem, which means that my setting it aside makes it inaccessible. Not halakhically inaccessible, practically inaccessible. So let me give you the classic example. A person has got some grapes. He wants to turn those grapes into raisins. In those days, the way that you did that was not to have one of those beautiful South African drying machines that now everybody is trying to copy. What you would do is you would take it and you would put it up on the roof and let it sit there baking in the sun until it got all dried out. What happens when you leave something baking in the sun is that it absolutely stinks for the first few days because it essentially is just rotting until it gets rid of all of the moisture, and then it becomes dehydrated properly like a food. So it would be like trying to eat biltong before it's dried. Nobody would want to do that. So therefore, you have an issue over here of, I have set it aside, and it is not really going to be accessible all Shabbos because nobody would want such a thing. So if you're really desperate and you decide, well, I'm going to eat it anyway, would you be allowed to take it or not? Rabbi Shimon agrees in that case, says Shmuel, that that is considered to be muktzah. So therefore, ein muktzah l'Rabbi Shimon, just because it was set aside without there being any kind of issur associated with it, ela grogrot v'tzimukim bilvat. This is done like for figs and for raisins. You set them out to dry on the roof. They haven't dried out. They're disgusting. And because of that, you have the combination of the fact that I did the act of setting them aside, and even though I didn't do something to make them inaccessible in terms of Isser, I knew perfectly well that they would be inaccessible because they would smell, and I wouldn't really want them. So that is also considered to be a type of Muktzah Aliba the Rabbi Shimon. But as you can see, there's no contradiction between those two statements. Ein Muktzah l'Rabbi Shimon ela grogot l'tzimukim. Or ein muktzah l'Rabbi Shimon ela k'ein shemen shebener. They're talking about two completely different elements of accessibility. One of them is a ketzui midaite that is related to the halakhic status of whether there's any issur that's involved in my accessing them. And the other is whether there's a logistic problem in my being able to access them. We're going to see soon an extension of these logistic problems. So here's a beautiful case. Wait a second. Are you saying only figs and raisins? How about other things that do not really get so disgusting? What about if you put some peaches up there, you know? Peaches, they don't like turn into this bit. It takes a little while to get them fully dried out, but they're still edible. You put some apples up there to make dried apples, it's still edible. And yet, Vatanya, Haya ochel b'te'enim, a guy's eating some figs, he leaves some over, and he brings them up to the roof and decides he's going to turn them into grogro, dried figs, right? He's eating grapes, and he leaves some over, he brings them up to the roof in order to make raisins. He cannot eat them unless he specifically says, I am going to use these things on Shabbos. So he has to be mazmin them for Shabbos, and that's considered to be muchat. The same thing, however, would be true, of peaches. Oh. And quinces, Rashi actually translates chavushim as quince. So as quinces, of course, it's only quince because you're an Ashkenazi and you pronounce your wav as a v, but it's really a quince. And the same thing would be about all other different types of fruits. So it says any fruit. So apparently it's not because it's inaccessible by being disgusting. So then you're wrong. Apparently, Rabbi Shimon holds something is considered to be muktzah simply because of the fact that it was set aside. Now, it can't be that this is going like Rabbi Yehuda, is it? Because who do you think it is? Elema Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda needs to tell me a case there I set it aside, biyadayim. Rabbi Yehuda holds bichlal of this magic idea of muktzah just because it's the way it is, even if I didn't do something to set it aside. So, if Rabbi Yehuda was willing to say that hecha delo dachi biyadayim, he holds of muktzah, he holds of automatic muktzah all over the darn place, right? So, kol shekein, if I did something by putting it up on the roof, it's going to be muktzah. I don't need to know that. I'll leave it to Rabbi Shimon, do I? It's got to be there for Elalav Rabbi Shimon. He's the only one that this would be a chiddush to. And the chiddush is saying it is not limited to inaccessibility due to its being inedible. Ha! No. It could be it's a chiddush Aliba de Rabbi Yehuda. So what's the chiddush? The chiddush is that you were right in the middle of eating them. That's the chiddush. Ochel itztrich alei. Is since we're talking about Haya Ochel. Why do you think that it tells us a story? Come on, man. The guy was sitting and eating, and he leaves over, and who cares why he went up to the roof and put it on the roof? Do I care whether he was sitting and eating and had leftovers, or because he grew it in the first place to do that? It's a ridiculous story. No, it's the whole point, that you would have thought that since I'm in the middle of eating this, so the fact that I happen to have some leftover, put them upstairs. No, that's not considered to be, according to Rabbi Yehuda, niskatsoi midaite. I was just eating them. Kamashmon, even that is enough, according to Rabbi Yehuda, to be niskatsoi midaite. But a libid Rabbi Shimon, Since these are not things that will be inaccessible, it would not be usher. The only ones that would be usher would in fact be the grapes and the figs or anything like that that would get completely ruined in the interim and be inedible. Okay, now, how about something just the other way around? Something was not accessible, but you never did anything to make it inaccessible. How about that, according to Rebbe Shimon? Now, this was a question that was asked by Rebbe's son, Rebbe Shimon, not to be confused with Rebbe Shimon Bar Yochai. So this is Rebbe Shimon Bar Rebbe, who asked Rebbe, tell me, my dear father, what would be the din of Patz Ilei Tamara, according to Rebbe Shimon? Now, Patz Ilei Tamara are these types of dates that do not ripen. They only ripen, as we learned in the Mishnah in Kalim, when you make these chotolot for them out of the leaves of the date palm. You leave them sitting in there for a long time until they finally ripen in there, but they won't ripen while they're on the tree. Now, I didn't do a darn thing to these dates to make them in any way inaccessible, right? So I didn't put them aside and say I'm not going to use them, but they are currently not usable. So now I'm asking about the other half of the equation. We've determined that according to Rebbe Shimon, the act of ktsia midaite together with inaccessibility creates a din of enu menamucha. We've seen, according to Rabbi Shimon, that the act of kitsoi with an associated iser that makes them inaccessible is considered to be eno min hamuchan. How about the fact of eno min hamuchan? Would that itself, without my having done anything at all, would that be sufficient to aser, according to Rabbi Shimon? To which his father, Rebbe, replied, of course not. We're talking about, if you have a usable thing, we're talking about two different elements that only in combination are considered to be enu min hamuchan. You had to have been mikatzea et midatcha, A, and it had to have been actually inaccessible, B. In this case, it was inaccessible, but you weren't mikatzea et midatcha. Okay, so now if Rabbi Shimon bar Rebbe was asking his father what the din is aliba to Rabbi Shimon, it's mashma that his father holds of Rabbi Shimon. But is that true? You're telling me that Rabbi doesn't hold of mukta? How do you explain the Mishnah in Beitza? Now, here we have a fascinating additional example of non-accessibility, not because of inedible things, but because of literally physically inaccessible without going through a great deal of tircha. So what would be the case? Well, here we're talking about yontif. So suppose you've got free-ranging animals, okay? Are you allowed to shecht them on yontif? A free-range animal is not easily accessible to you because you don't know where it is. You, the din is, it says in the Mishnah, that ein mashkin v'shochtin etam midbariyot, you're not allowed to shecht free-ranging animals. Mashkin is always part of shochtim. You will remember it because before shechita, they would give a drink to the animal as you give a prisoner his last meal. And just to be nice to the animal, we say, would you like some wine? Would you like some schnapps? And we give, no, that's not really the pshat. It's actually a bit cynical. We give them a drink because in their drinking, it becomes easier to skin them after we do the shechita. Nasty, nasty. So it's sort of more like a KGB last drink. So in this case, you're not allowed to do that on yontev if they're free-ranging. But if they are household animals, when we say household, we mean farmyard animals, then mashkin v'shochtin at abaytot. How do we define free-range animals? Elein midbariyot. Look, these are the kind of animals that they leave your farm and after Pesach, and they don't come back until after the rainy season begins in Cheshvan. So they're basically out of sight for 6 months. You have no idea where they are. Those are considered to be free-ranging because you can't get to them. What defines baitot? Baitot are they would be allowed out to free-range during the day, but at night they come back in and they go into the farmyard. Okay, Rebbe says, and here's our problem. Rebbe says, nah, both of those things are considered to be farmyard animals. You know what a free-ranging animal is? It's an animal that you let it out to go wherever the heck it wants, and you never see it again. Lo b'yamot ha'chama, lo b'yamot ha'gishamim. And basically, you want to get this animal, you got to go look for it, and it could take you a couple of days. Okay, so that, apparently, according to Rebbe, is muktzah. But why would it be muktzah? I mean, it's allowed to be eaten on Yontif, apparently holds of Rebbe Yehuda, that since it was free-ranging, it's not considered to be in your mind, and therefore it's not considered to be min ha'muchan. So apparently he doesn't hold of Rebbe Shimon. Answers the Gemara, I have three different answers for that. Number one, the fact that it's so difficult to get to these animals that have been let out and you don't have a clue as to where they are, and their little device that they wear that gives you on your cell phone that proper placement has run out of batteries. And because of that, they're the equivalent of grogrot v'tzimukim, because they are inaccessible to such an extent that they're equivalent of being inedible like grogrot v'tzimukim, and therefore Rabbi Shimon is made up. That if you set your animals out like that, it's the equivalent of putting your grapes up on the roof. So that's true even according to Rabbi Shimon. That's my first approach, okay? If you don't like that, then I could say that Reb Shimon bar Rebbe never knew that his father held of Rebbe Shimon. He knew that his father held of Rebbe Yehuda. He was only asking a theoretical question. Abba, what do you think Rebbe Shimon would hold in these circumstances? He wasn't saying that you hold of it. But maybe Lidvar of the Rebbe Shimon kamer levelei lo sfirale. And if you want, I can tell you another pshat. I can tell you that Rebbe, what makes you think that Rebbe in this Mishnah, when he's defining by Tote Midbariot, he's saying what his own Shita is. He was just responding to the Tanakama. What he was saying is essentially, as far as I'm concerned, Lididi, I don't hold it as all Muktzah jazz. I don't know what you guys are talking about. But if you insist on believing in Muktzah the way Rabbi Yehuda holds, so at least Oda Lemias at least admit that just because they go out at Pesach and they don't come back for a half a year, that doesn't mean they're not accessible. That's considered to be a nice barn animal, right? That's Baitot. And the Rabbanan say, no, we don't agree with that. That is called free-ranging, and that's Midbariot. Okay. Now, the question is, what is the Shita of Rabbi Yochanan? Does Rabbi Yochanan hold of Rabbi Shimon, or does Rabbi Yochanan hold of Rabbi Yehuda? Omer Rabba Bar Bachana, Om Rabbi Yochanan. They say, this is what Rabbi Yochanan said, quote, they say, which seems to mean they say that, they're saying in the yeshiva, now, I guess I can go along with that. They say that the halacha is like Rabbi Shimon. Rabbi Yochanan said that? Rabbi Yochanan is ready to go along with the halacha being like Rabbi Shimon? Wasn't there a case where a certain old man came along from a Keruya, or some say he was from Seruyan, old man? He asked Rabbi Yochanan, what would be the din about moving a chicken coop? We're talking about one of those modern chicken coops that they pile up on the truck afterwards. The whole thing is movable, right? Would you be allowed to be metaltal a chicken coop on Shabbos, or not? So Rabbi Yochanan said, I don't understand your question. Last I heard, chicken coops are made for chickens. So isn't it so that klum asui eila latanagolet? And animals are mukta on Shabbos, and therefore this is designed to be used by animals. And because of that, either we're going to say that it's a basis ledavar hamukta, which not everybody agrees to, because you can always chase out the chickens. And then why is something about basis where you're able to get rid of that which makes it awesome? So because of that, they learn that the issue over here is the question of it being a kli shemalachto liyisr. So that means that he's agreeing with Rabbi Yehuda. Not necessarily. Maybe what the Zakein was asking Rabbi Yochanan is, what would be the din of a chicken coop if one of the chicks died in it? So since it's a dead chick, I mean, Rabbi Shimon would be made that is ipso facto unusable for Shabbos and eino min hamuchan, because like this, if it was dead before, that wouldn't be a problem, obviously, because dead chickens are still usable for feeding to the cat. That's not a problem. But if it was a perfectly healthy animal, and then suddenly it drops dead on Shabbos, then Rabbi Shimon is made that it's muktzah, because the guy certainly was not going to have what to do with this live thing on Shabbos. So it was indeed the equivalent of a rock. And Rabbi Shimon is made to a rock. So the question is, now I want to know whether it's a basis to a dover that is muktzah. According to this approach, when Rabbi Yochanan said, last I heard chicken coops were made for chickens, is that basically what he's saying is that, look, I mean, there's always a proportion, 1%, 2% of chicks die in these coops, at least. So therefore, it's meant for that purpose. So therefore, it's as if I left it there on purpose, a dead chick. Wait a minute. Rabbi Yochanan said, we're saying over here that Idbo Efroach mate, but that's not true according to everybody that Rabbi Shimon would hold that. I'm sorry. That is actually Machlokes. So according to Mar Bar Mimar, who quotes Rava as saying that Rabbi Shimon is mate, that a live animal that was never intended to be used for giving to a dog, and it suddenly dies on Shabbos, and now you want to use it for dog food, even there Rabbi Shimon is mate, that is considered to be usur on Shabbos, even though normally it would have allowed you to cut up a dead animal for a dog. But in this case, if it was completely healthy before, so then it was like a rock. But what about according to Marbrei the Rav Yosef, who quotes Rav as saying that actually Cholokai Reb Shimon, even with a Baal Chai that was Mason, Reb Shimon says it's perfectly okay, and that would be mutter. And it's essentially that if I had the case of lighting the fire, that's because I did something. But over here, I didn't do anything. It was just a healthy animal. Did I do something to be mekatzea it? No. And I thought we said that Rabbi Shimon holds that unless I do something, it's not muksa. Now, so the question boils down to whether the healthy animal that dies is the equivalent of a rock or not. Fine, okay, that's a detail in Rabbi Shimon. But what would you say according to Rava, Ma'ikel HaMeimar? So what was Rabbi Yochanan saying? That according to my opinion, the chickens are made, chicken coops are made for chickens, and therefore it should be muktzah. Well, we'd have to be talking about a case over here that a chicken laid an egg in the chicken coop. Aha! Now, we get at last to this other concept of nolad. The classic nolad, of course, is a laid egg. The laid egg was not available for Shabbos before. So therefore, according to Rabbi Shimon, it ought to be the Eino Min HaMuchan because it wasn't in the world. And if it isn't in the world, then it's not ready for use on Shabbos, which boils down to calling it Muktzah. Again, I don't like to say it's Muktzah because Rabbi Shimon doesn't believe in Muktzah. But fine, we'll say it that way because that's how everybody says it. So there, Rabbi Shimon is made that it's Muktzah. So that would be the case. So Rabbi Yochanan said, if it's made for chickens, so then it's as if you put it there before Shabbos. So it's definitely a basis of Dover Asr. Ah, says the Gemara. But not everybody agrees that Nolad is Eino Min HaMuchan. Because Reb Nachman said, excuse me, gentlemen, only if you believe in Muktzah do you believe in Nolad. But if you don't believe in Muktzah, then you don't believe in Nolad either. Because, I mean, look. The fact is, chickens lay eggs, and therefore, I, who have this chicken, expect to use that egg in the morning when the chicken uses it, and I like having a nice fresh egg on Shabbos. So why, just because it's currently inaccessible, is that considered to be Eino Min HaMuchan? Now, that makes sense according to Rabbi Yehuda, but why would it make sense according to Rabbi Shimon? Just because it was inaccessible for the first part of Shabbos? Now it is accessible. Therefore, Taina's Reb Nachman, that even Aliba to Rabbi Shimon, there is no such thing as a concept of Eino Min HaMuchan just because it's Nolad if this was an anticipated event. Okay, so then you can't answer that it has an eggy in it. So then why did Reb Yochanan say that a chicken coop is Muktzah if he really believes that the halacha is like Rabbi Shimon? Answers the Gemara, it has a beitza with a chick in it that's been incubated and now it's unhatched. That is definitely muksa. You can't feed that to a dog because a dog does not eat an egg that's covered with a shell. So dogs don't eat eggs, so forget about that. You can't use it for itself because there's nothing you can do with it. It's like a novella. It's completely useless. So therefore, over here, Rabbi Yochanan was saying, I hold like Rabbi Shimon. Rabbi Shimon agrees that useless things like rocks are not in the Shabbos milieu. and therefore they're ipso facto einu min hamuchan, and therefore, since you knew that this chicken coop was made for chickens and this is a situation that often happens, you would have to take into consideration that's the equivalent of placing it there, and the whole thing becomes a basis l'davar ha'asur. I cannot explain to you about holding up bets, but the question over here is not whether you anticipate the egg to hold up a bet. That is, I was kidding yesterday when I said, what else would you do with an egg? Once you have an egg, you can use it to hold up your bet. But we're certainly not going to say, who's Yoshev Umitzape, which is the Lashon in Beitza, is Yoshev Umitzape for the egg because he needs it to hold up his bed. I don't think that anybody was ready to say that. Okay. All right. So now we've been assuming that Rabbi Yochanan does agree with Rabbi Shimon because he said Amru. But it turns out that when Rabbi Yitzchak, Rabbi Yosef, came from Eretz Yisrael, he said that Rabbi Yochanan actually paskin like Rabbi Yehuda, which makes the entire discussion, of course, completely understandable. I don't need to start explaining all of these things about eggs or dead chicks or whatever. And here's the thing that made things clear at last to Rabbi Yosef. And Rabbi Yochanan said, but Rabbi Yoshua ben Levi paskin that the halacha is like Rabbi Shimon. Oh my gosh, says Rabbi Yosef, that's what he meant. When Rabbi Barbachana said that Rabbi Yochanan said, well, they say that the halacha is like Rabbi Shimon, he meant they, that is to say, Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, you know, those guys, they say that the halacha is like Rabbi Shimon. I don't believe it for a minute. That was the tone that was supposed to be set in. Not, well, they say in the yeshiva halacha Rabbi Shimon, okay, I can go along with that. Now I finally understand what's going on. But he was saying, I don't agree, Lelo Svirle. Abaya hears Rabbi Yosef say this, and he said, oh my God, and before Rabbi Yitzchak came, you couldn't figure out on your own that Rabbi Yochanan holds like Rabbi Yehuda, and he doesn't hold like Rabbi Shimon? I mean, it was the famous story where Rabbi Abba and Rabbi Asi once came into the house of Rabbi Abba in Haifa, and the menorah falls onto Rabbi Asi's robe that he's wearing, and he did not take the menorah off of his robe. He wouldn't move the menorah off of his robe. So why not? I mean, obviously because it was Muktzah. Now, I mean, we know that Rabbi Asi is a star Talmud of Rabbi Yochanan. And if he wouldn't move the menorah, he obviously was going like Rabbi Yochanan that he holds a Muktzah. And he holds like Rabbi Yehuda, the Yisrael Muktzah. Because of that, he wouldn't pick up the menorah. So everybody knew that story. It was so funny. And how come you needed Rabbi Yitzchak to come from Eretz Yisrael to tell you something that everybody knows? Said Rabbi Yosef, no, wait a minute. On the basis of that story, I would not have concluded that Rabbi Yochanan holds like Rabbi Yeshua. I'm very sorry, because that's a special situation where a whole menorah falls over. The menorah is like this whole fancy candelabra, right? And a menorah is different, because that's muktzah, even according to Rabbi Shimon. Because Rav Acha Bar Chanina Amar Rav Asi, that Reish Lakish Paskin, while he was in Sidon, that if you've got a easy-to-move menorah, B'yodo Acha, so usually these things are massive. This thing is a lot like a sort of light menorah that you're able to move with only one hand. You're allowed to move it on Shabbos, Alibed Rebbe Shimon. But if it's b'shtei yadav, if you can't move it unless you pick it up with both hands, ugh, then even Rabbi Shimon is made that you cannot move it on Shabbos. Rabbi Yochanan says, as far as I'm concerned, the only kind of thing that you are allowed to move that I would buy into would be muktzah b'machos mius. Because when it comes to muktzah b'machos mius, I agree with Rabbi Shimon. But when it comes to menorah, I don't care how much it weighs. Doesn't matter. It's a light menorah. It's a heavy menorah. I don't know what you're talking about. But anyway, fine. So Reish Lakish and Rabbi Yochanan are arguing what the din is about an easy-to-move menorah. But they're both agreeing that even Alibed Rabbi Shimon, you would not be allowed to move a heavy menorah. Why not, for heaven's sakes? What does this mean? This is like, why would he hold him such a thing? V'taim amai. Rabba v'Rav Yosef d'Amri Tarvayu. Ho'il v'adam koveya lo makom. The problem over here is that something that people bedafka do not want to move on Shabbos, because it's valuable, it might fall, and they don't want it to be moved from its place. You put it into its place, and if somebody comes along and starts fooling it, you say, keep your hands off of that. So that is considered to be, of course, Eino Min HaMuchan, Imen HaLiben Rabbi Shimon. And as we already saw by Mukzer Machmas Chisaron Kis, I don't want that played with. So that is considered to be even Aliba to Rabbi Shimon, not within the Shabbos milieu at all, Aliba, the Shita of Eino Min HaMuchan. And that must be what the case was over here. Now, tomorrow we're going to question whether just being Kovei HaMokom is actually sufficient, according to Rabbi Shimon, to Aser. So let's just review all of the new exciting things that we discovered today. So what we did today is we went into the question of how much something is called Eino Min HaMuchan Aliba de Rabbi Shimon. We talked about the concept of Iskatsoi Midaite being Eino Min HaMuchan because of the way that you thought about it. But what does it need to be coupled to in order to make that Iskatsoi something that you can't just change your mind about because now you've decided yes to use it? And what we came up with is some fascinating ideas. One is that it could be coupled to an iser that even Rabbi Shimon is motivated to. For instance, Muktzeh Machmas Mitzvah has nothing to do with the concept of Muchan in its Shoresh. It has to do with the concept of Bizui Mitzvah. So to use something that was going to be used for a mitzvah is inappropriate. Once that's true, and you were Mekatzea it for the mitzvah, now it actually becomes Muktzeh, you see? So that is something that goes outside of the bounds of Shabbos. That would be true even about taking a sheet down off of a sukkah. Now there, if it's coupled to that, or if it's coupled to an iser, then that would be sufficient. How long does the mitzvah go? As long as it would be usher to put out the lamp and it's still burning, or as long as you had set things up to continue to burn. Okay, that was one category. Then we found another category, and that was where it was iskatsoi midaite, in a way that would make it logistically inaccessible. And we found two possibilities for logistically inaccessible. One of which was the Tzimukim VeGrogrot, where it's logistically inaccessible because it won't be edible. The other was the case where it's logistically inaccessible, according to the Ibois Ema, of defining free-ranging animals as being such a hassle to be able to find and get that in practical terms, it's logistically inaccessible. And therefore, you're not going to want to go to that kind of trouble. Okay, that may be yes, maybe no. It was only an Ibois Ema. But we do have these three possibilities in the Rabbi Shimon case that would constitute, even according to Rabbi Shimon, an Eino Min HaMuchan, in addition to the obvious Eino Min HaMuchan of something that is useless. And that would include stones and money and stuff like that. That's a given, that's Eino Min HaMuchan. Now, we were questioning at the end of the sugya as to whether the kvi'ut of a thing in its place, which therefore makes it inaccessible because of the fact that it bothers you that it should be moved. And there, the iskatsoi is much more powerful than just, well, I may change my mind and use it. No, you will not change your mind and use it. So it's a more powerful iskatsoi, whether that itself would be sufficient in Rabbi Shimon. Again, in all of these cases, of course, Rabbi Yehuda holds that the very fact that it isn't something that you intend to use is also considered to be muktzeh. Then we had the first taste of the very important machlokas about whether nolad is considered to be ipso facto eino min hamuchan, since it's inaccessible. And that was a machlokas between Reb Nachman and others as to whether nolad itself is dependent on the machlokas, Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon. And so when you anticipate something, it's not considered to be eino min hamuchan, or whether eino min hamuchan includes the accessibility to it within your space, that is to say, within your world. And if it is not yet entered your world, like an egg that does not exist yet, then the fact that you anticipate the appearance of the egg is not sufficient to be calling it part of the Shabbos milieu. That was a whole different question of what the Eino Min HaMuchan would include, Aliba de Rabbi Shimon. So as you can see, this is extremely rich, full of all types of beautiful subtleties, which boil down to the question of one's conscious relationship to items on Shabbat, which gets back to the issue of things needing to be muchan for Shabbat, which takes us back to the Lechem Mishnah, which takes us back to Hotzah, which leads us directly back into Muktzah as an extension of the Dinim of Hotzah anyway.